We're here to mark that day in history when the Allied armies joined in battle to reclaim this continent to liberty. For four long years, much of Europe had been under a terrible shadow. Free nations had fallen. Europe was enslaved and the world prayed for its rescue. Here in Normandy, the rescue began. Here the Allies stood and fought against tyranny in a giant undertaking unparalleled in human history. At dawn on the morning of the 6th of June, 1944, 225 Rangers jumped off the British landing craft and ran to the bottom of these cliffs. Their mission was one of the most difficult and daring of the invasion, to climb these sheer and desolate cliffs and take out the enemy guns. And the American Rangers began to climb. When one Ranger fell, another would take his place. They knew what awaited them there, but they would not be deterred. 225 came here. After 2 days of fighting, only 90 could still bear arms. Behind me is a memorial that symbolizes the Ranger daggers that were thrust into the top of these cliffs. And before me are the men who put them there. These are the boys of Puente Hope. These are the men who took the cliffs. These are the champions who helped free a continent. These are the heroes who helped end a war. 40 summers have passed since the battle that you fought here. You were young the day you took these cliffs. Some of you were hardly more than boys with the deepest joys of life before you. Yet you risked everything here. Why? Why did you do it? We look at you and somehow we know the answer. It was faith and belief. It was loyalty and love. It was the deep knowledge, and pray God we have not lost it, that there is a profound moral difference between the use of force for liberation and the use of force for conquest. Something else helped the men of D-Day. The rock-hard belief that Providence would have a great hand in the events that would unfold here, that God was an ally in this great cause. These are the things that impelled them. These are the things that shaped the unity of the Allies. Today, as 40 years ago, our armies are here for only one purpose, to protect and defend democracy. We in America have learned bitter lessons from two world wars. It is better to be here ready to protect the peace than to take blind shelter across the sea, rushing to respond only after freedom is lost. Here in this place, where the West held together, let us make a vow to our dead. Let us show them by our actions that we understand what they died for. Let us continue to stand for the ideals for which they lived and died. Thank you very much, and God bless you.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
With liberty and justice for all. Good evening, Global Patriots. You're listening to Global Patriot Radio, the Vito Esposito Show. I'm Vito. Our call-in number tonight in every Global Patriot Radio night is area code 319-527-6706. That's area code 319-527-6706. And I'm joined by the no-pork eating American lover, Big Al. How you doing, Al?
Hey, I'm doing great, Vito. Happy D-Day.
Happy D-Day. D-Day, June 6, 1944, 78 years ago. That was President Ronald Reagan, former President Ronald Reagan, celebrating the 40th anniversary or commemorating the 40th anniversary of D-Day. It's hard to believe that was 38 years ago today. You know, Ronald Reagan, what can you say about President Reagan? D-Day, a day that will live in infamy along with December 7th, 1941. And I think that D-Day was the turning point for the World War II European campaign. And D-Day, a day in which young men gave their lives to preserve the very freedoms that we enjoy today. There was no wokeness, no political correctness, no multiculturalism. D-Day showed us that patriotism trumped wokeness, where boys became men, and many men on D-Day paid the ultimate price to preserve America and to preserve freedom. They gave their lives. Normandy beaches, 1,465 Allies killed, 1,928 missing, 6,603 soldiers wounded. Juneau Beach, primarily Canadian forces, 335 were dead, 611 wounded. British forces, 2,500 to 3,000 were killed and wounded and missing. The after-action report showed that 2,811 were killed, 5,665 were missing, 79 were taken prisoners, and 13,564 were wounded, including paratroopers. 78 years later, military leaders now playing politics, invoking political correctness, implementing identity and gender politics, setting up safe rooms for those with Trump deranged syndrome. You know, imagine 78 years ago, 18, 19, and 20-year-old soldiers boarded amphibious vehicles to storm the beaches of Normandy, Sword Beach, Juneau Beach, Gold Beach, Omaha Beach, Utah beaches. Today, the left-wing cowardly revisionists cower into a little ball if someone sends out a mean tweet. And I tell you, times have changed. Last Monday was Memorial Day, and today we remember those brave fallen soldiers who paid the ultimate price, giving their lives for the preservation of the freedoms that we enjoy today. God bless our troops and God bless America. Al, it's hard to believe 78 yep. years already.
Whoa. Yeah, but unfortunately, too many Americans, you know, mark June 6th is just another day on the calendar. But we have no reason really to blame them for our society's not instilled within them an appreciation of our nation's history. The sacrifice of those who have worn the uniform or the fact that one dreary morning in June 1944, the world held its breath. It was fate and the indomitable courage of young Americans who determined whether our world would be plunged forever into darkness or be offered the ability to rekindle the spark of freedom. And that spark of freedom was rekindled, and it blossomed, and it grew out of the war-torn World War II, only for us to come under attack again.
Yeah, and you know, you look back on what basically what transpired and the risk that the Allies took, led by, you know, General Dwight D. Eisenhower, Omar Bradley, and British General Montgomery, and they took that chance. You know, they took the chance to take on Hitler and the what would you call it, the oppressive and totalitarian regime whose goal, ultimate goal, Adolf Hitler, was to rule the world. And the invasion on January 6th, 1944 was incredible. You know, just from the standpoint of it not getting out, the ability that even the media showed the respect to allow the Allies to execute such a bold maneuver. And it certainly was the turning point of the European campaign. I mean, they basically outfoxed the Germans. They outfoxed Hitler and his so-called elitist. And you know, you have to give a lot of credit to generals Montgomery, Bradley, and certainly Dwight D. Eisenhower benefited from that incredible. Incredible foresight to undertake on June 6th, and it's just the greatest generation. That's why they're the greatest generation. And it's what's sad is today, 78 years later, there is a political party, a political movement in America to implement some of the Adolf Hitler draconian and authoritarian rules, and to basically to shed America of its constitutional republic. And just never, you know, we'll always be grateful for what the brave men did during World War II. And, you know, with, was it 2,811 killed just on June 6, 1944? Absolutely incredible. Incredible. 79 prisoners.
Yep.
I hadn't heard about, I didn't realize that they took prisoners. I, you know, so that's one thing you kind of forget about, but they captured 79. I'm sure that most of them are probably paratroopers, I would think.
Yeah, I recall them shooting the paratroopers out of the sky. It was very brutal.
Oh.
And and World War II is no slam dunk.
No. Nope.
We very easily could have lost that, the Allies. Very easily. I think it was an act of God that we won, quite frankly.
Well, I'll quote my dad. What he said about the World War II and what he thought the turning point was. He thought the turning point was, you know, first of all, the invasion on June 6th was incredible, you know, and to be just for it to be done without any knowledge. I mean, there were no reports and, you know, he was in the military at that time and they had no indication of it even happening. But he thought that the turning point of the war was when they were marching through Bastogne after I don't recall when it was. It was probably September, October-ish, when they were marching through Bastogne. And as they were going through, they saw what they thought were hay fields. And somebody went and checked. They sent a patrol to check these haystacks. And these guys came back, and he said they were shaken and they were mad. You know, a couple of guys were pale and they realized that they weren't haystacks. They were American soldiers, paratroopers who were shot out of the sky. And the Germans, the brutality of the Nazis was to shoot them out of the sky and then to castrate, and they severed their penises and they shoved them in the mouths. And my father said that he firmly believed that was the turning point of the war in Europe. They were so mad. They were so angry. He said, I can't remember if we did a 15 or we were done with a 15-20 mile hike. He says, but we weren't tired anymore. We were mad. And he says, in the dog faces, the Yankees got mad. And when the Yanks got mad, there was nothing holding us back. And that's what he, you know, that, I can't remember verbatim what he said, but I do remember him stating exactly that, which is probably a story that you will not not widely known, because my father wouldn't say it in front of my mother. So, and again, here's the greatest generation, right?
Well, they were fighting for their lives. They were fighting for each other more than a lot of cases. A lot of the vets that I've talked to, they were fighting more for their unit and their fighting for the man next to him on each side.
Yeah.
And that was how focused they were. Saving the country was just part of it, but mainly they were fighting for their unit to stay alive. Amazing.
Yeah, as Reagan said, you know, the use of force for liberation versus conquest, and that was the difference, right? And
mm-hmm.
the belief in God. So we will remember June 6th, 1944. I remember I live, so in a, every year that we're back, we'll commemorate D-Day. PGA news real quick. The Memorial was played this past weekend, hosted by golf great Jack Nicklaus in Ohio. America's Billy Horschel took charge of the tournament on Saturday, ended around with a 5-shot lead. Sunday, Horschel didn't do anything spectacular other than make pars in the front nine. And it's Sunday morning, Sunday afternoon, to maintain his two to three shot lead over his Sunday challenger, Australian Aaron Wise. But things changed on the par 5 15th hole. Horschel hit what he thought was a poor drive, dropping his driver after the swing. However, that drive went straight down the fairway over 300 yards. I believe they clocked it at 305 or 307 yards, leaving him about 245 yards for his second shot. Either he lays up or he goes for it, and to his credit, he's going for it, and he's playing aggressive. He hit a 5-wood, and he puts the ball on the green from 245 yards with a 5-wood. He's got about a 45 to a 50-foot putt because it rolled about 50 feet past the hole. Now he has a downhill, undulating, and breaking putt, and Horschel hits this eagle putt. The ball rolls, breaking a bit to the right, then it comes back to the left, and about a foot from the hole, the camera man caught the perfect angle. About a foot from the hole, this ball takes a left turn, and it drops dead center into the cup for an eagle three. He goes from a two-shot lead and stretches it to four shots, even after Wise birdies the hole, his opponent, who ended up in second place. Wise birdies the 15th hole. So Horschel held on even after bogeying the 17th hole to win by four shots. He won the prestigious Memorial Open hosted by Hall of Famer Jack Nicklaus. It was Horschel's seventh PGA Tour victory. He gets an automatic invite to the 2023 Masters and a two-year tour exemption, and a $1.8 million purse. Did you watch any of that tournament?
Yep. There was a spectacular ending, and hey, he's got such a smooth swing. Scottie Scheffler is a pleasure to watch.
That was Billy Horschel.
You're right. I'm sorry. I'm looking at the wrong. Yep.
Scheffler took off the
too,
swing.
But Horschel, yeah. Horschel, though, yeah, beautiful swing. That was quite a tournament.
Yeah, and you know what? The ladies had a great tournament this weekend. It was the U.S. Women's Open. It was held at Pine Needles in North Carolina this past weekend. But, Al, the LPGA does a very poor job in scheduling. And, again, this year it seems like I don't want to beat up on the LPGA, but why do you schedule a major the same weekend as the PGA's Memorial? They could have held it last week. They could hold it next week. You know, but why would you hold it, you know, versus Jack Nicklaus's tournament? It was a pretty good tournament as well, and it was a good golf weekend. But I'll tell you, Thursday's round started with excitement, and I was watching the ladies this weekend, including on Thursday, amateur Ingrid Lindblad. I think she's 22 years old. She's from Sweden, but she goes to school in the United States. She shoots a 6-under 65 on Thursday, which the 65 is a record for an amateur in the U.S. Open. And she was playing alongside Hall of Famer Annika Sorenstam. And I'll tell you, what a display by this young lady. Sorenstam had previously won the U.S. Open when it was played last at Needle Pines about 10 years ago. But she shoots a 65. A 65. Playing with, you know, the Hall of Famer, her first U.S. Open, but she couldn't keep the low scores going. However, she backed up the next 2 days on Friday and Saturday by shooting 71s, even pars, so she remained at 6-under par. But Sunday, reality hit, and, you know, just I felt bad for her. She shot a 5-over 76, so she dropped from 6-under to 1-under. But still, she did very well for her first showing. The weekend belonged to Australian Minji Lee. She did have a bit of a challenge by USA's Mina Haragai. Lee took charge of the tournament on Saturday. I was watching that, and Saturday, you could tell exactly where that turning point was because she and Haragai were playing neck and neck on the front nine on Saturday, but then Lee separated herself from Haragai and the field. And she ended Saturday with a three-shot lead and never really looked back. Sunday was no different. She stretched her lead at one point to six shots. But in the end, even with the hiccup on the 18th hole, missing a three-footer for par, Minji Lee won the U.S. Open by four shots. So congratulations to Minji Lee. She earned a 10-year exemption into the U.S. Women's Open. And she has a record purse this year of $1.8 million is what she earned. And finishing sole second was USA's Mina Haragai. And she took home a $1,080,000 prize, which very nice. And it's nice to see that women's prize money is getting up there, and both ladies deserve a lot of credit. All the ladies deserve a credit, but including Lindblad, the rookie. So well, that's a name you'll have to watch when she turns pro. She's pretty aggressive, and she did great. But Minji Lee was, you want to talk about a beautiful swing? My goodness gracious, that lady has a hell of a swing. Oh, yeah, she hits the ball a ton. I don't know if you caught any of that.
No, I missed the LPGA this week, but it was a great recap.
Yeah, thanks. She was Minji Lee, her brother plays on the European tour as well, and that young man is going to be one to watch. He won the Scottish Open a couple of years back and earned a spot into the British Open, so he's got a lot of talent. But this lady's I think this is her sixth win on the LPGA tour, including two majors now. So good for Minji Lee. One more note, French Open was played the past two weekends, and yesterday was the men's finals featuring 13-time French Open winner Rafael Nadal and Casper Ruud. Spain's Rafael Nadal, the modern king of clay, dominated once again. He defeated Casper Ruud in straight sets, 6-3, 6-3, 6-0. To win his 14th career French Open title, his 22nd Grand Slam victory. You know, whether you like the guy or not, I got to say this is quite impressive. 14 French Open titles is really impressive. He does dominate. I mean, he's beaten everybody, including Federer a couple of times. And what's his name? The world's number one. He's beaten him several times on clay. So he's really figured it out in the doll. He's a tough cookie.
Yep, he's a GOAT, greatest of all time on the clay, no doubt about it.
Yeah, he's amazing. One quick announcement here that we have,
one thing with the golf that needs to be talked about is Kevin Na and the PGA, because he resigned from the PGA this week in a very controversial move, and what's your thoughts on that?
Well, I read his departure, his resignation letter that he posted up on Twitter. I say goodbye. I like the fact that he didn't make this all about him. He didn't say anything controversial like a Sergio Garcia said stupid things and Phil Mickelson said stupid things about the PGA. He thanked the PGA for the opportunity. He understands the position of the PGA. To me, I took from that he respected the PGA's decision, and he was going to comply with it at this time, and maybe at some point in time the PGA will change their stance and their policies and procedures, and at that point he'll reapply for reinstatement. I think that was the class way of doing it. He spent 19 years on the PGA Tour. He's got five or six victories. He made tens of millions of dollars on the PGA, even by not winning tournaments. So I give him credit where credit is due. To me, I give him credit for the way he handled it. And I think that, rather than pissing and moaning and berating the PGA, you know, or having a little tantrum like that little, what would you call him? Like Sergio, okay? You know, pissing and moaning about a ruling, you know, because he felt like he was wrong, as if it was only going to happen on the PGA Tour. And he made a stupid comment like, well, I'll have to put up with this for a couple of more weeks. Well, you know what? Screw you, Sergio. You made a shitload of money from the PGA Tour. The PGA promoted you really well, and you were above average at best as far as winning tournaments. You didn't win as many. You won two majors. God bless you, okay? You could have said some good things about the PGA Tour. They gave you the opportunity, especially as a 19-year-old. You know, you were in the PGA Championship alongside one of the game's greatest, which is Tiger Woods. You hit that incredible four iron from around the tree, okay, and you did that that split in the air, which ascended you to the top. But you had to be stupid, you know. You had to say so. And conversely, Kevin Na handled it like a gentleman. He understood the position, and he willfully resigned to join the LIV tournament, the LIV tour. So let's see if the LIV tour pans out. That's the way it should have been handled.
True. I agree. He did handle it very well. He handled it more on freedom issues, free market issues, and saying, well, I want to be a free agent. And in fact, he is a free agent because with the PGA, a lot of people don't know. They think, oh, well, maybe they're contract players. Well, golfers pay their own expenses. And those without the heavy endorsement contract could find themselves in the red with a string of bad tournaments. By contrast, you have other athletes that get annual minimums. So who is the PGA to put that string on these players that they must play for the PGA only when they're not covering any of their expenses or paying any type of a salary? It's kind of like contract labor. Like when I had my business, I had contract labor who were drivers for me. Part of that was I couldn't tell them, I could say, okay, I need this delivered by such and such a time. How you get there, how you accomplish it is you on you. And I had certain rules that I had to follow in order to have them as contract labor versus employees. And I think the same thing applies to these golfers in the PGA. Because we hear about the superstars, and yes, they make a lot of money. But then on the other hand, the PGA also gave money incentives for the European players to come and play for the PGA, bringing them over out of the European League with more money or the ability to make more money if you win. So what's the difference between what the PGA did with the European players versus what the Saudi Arabians are doing to the American players?
Well, the primary difference is this. The PGA owns the rights to the European Tour. What the PGA Tour did was they modified the rulings and to me, I think they righted it wrong. They used to have a minimum number of tournaments that a European player had to play in order to maintain PGA Tour status, and it might have been 7 or 12, which then infringed upon the European Tour's play. Now, several years ago, the PGA corrected that along with the European Tour because they're owned by the same entity, the same as the Asian Tour, the Canadian Tour, are all owned. They're all under the umbrella of the PGA. So they the PGA Tour corrected that. I think an error. You should get credit if you qualify for the U.S. Open and you're a European player, you should get credit on the European Tour for playing all four majors on the PGA side. That didn't happen in the past. The only one they got credit for was the British Open because it was played on European soil. So the PGA corrected that. It was all one entity versus the LIV Tour is a rival tour. It's a rival setup. And the PGA players also benefit from the PGA, even though they're independent contractors. They do receive compensation from the PGA, i.e. they get a retirement plan for playing on the PGA Tour. So, you know, that retirement plan could be significant, which blows my mind that Phil Mickelson gave up that pension that he was entitled to, which was somewhere in the vicinity of $250 million plus is the last one number I heard. So the PGA does, while you're an independent contractor, they do have rights to you. When you contract with the PGA, there are rights that you have to adhere to. So with regards to the European side, they weren't paying those players extra to an appearance
bonus.
Fee.
Yeah,
a bonus or appearance fee like the UAE does, United Arab Emirates. They paid like Tiger Woods a $5 million fee to play, you know, over there. And they don't do that. You know, the PGA didn't do that. So The other side of it is the LIV tour has no cut. So for guys like Kevin Na, who may miss, you know, 5, 6, 8, 10 events, you know, by not making the cut, there's no, for the eight tournaments that the eight tournament stops under LIV, there are no cuts. So you're going to be guaranteed a minimum of, I don't know, $35,000 or $54,000 if you finish in last place. So, you know, guys like Na, he could probably win one or two more times on the PGA Tour before he turns 50. But Lee Westwood hasn't won. Sergio could win again, possibly. But I don't think Graham McDowell will ever win again. And Ian Poulter won't win again on the PGA Tour. So it's really, you know, they're on the tail end of their career. So goodbye.
Boy, that's pretty harsh. I mean, I look at the PGA Tour, and like I said, they're independent contractors. They have to pay their own expenses, including travel, caddy, entry fees. And it's reported that they even have to pay the $50 charge to use the tournament locker room. And for any pictures that are taken of the players at PGA tournaments, they have to pay for those as well. So there are some inequities, and I guess it can be argued, but I think the players are true independent contractors. They should be allowed to go wherever they want. And I think it'll be good for the PGA to have this competition from the LIV, even though I'm not too crazy about the setup of their games, but I think this is a good thing because you've got the elite players, and then you got everybody else who are journeymen for the most part. And it's a tough life. It is not the multi-million dollar lifestyle that we see from the top 10% of the winningest PGA players who rightfully earn every penny they get because of their fantastic skills. And nobody gives you anything on the tour. You got to fight like hell just to stay on it.
Yeah. Yep.
But anyway, it's an interesting conversation for sure. But if you're not into golf, kind of dull, but boy, I tell you, there's a lot of other things happening.
There is, and before we go any further, Holger had asked that we mention this, and we put a link on the show notes. It's a Suzette and Rob announcement, and many of you know Suzette from Suzette Live on Spreaker.com. She actually broadcasts on the Ideas of Bulletproof, which is RZ's network, on Spreaker.com. She airs Tuesday evenings at 8 p.m. Eastern time, 5 p.m. West Coast time. And Suzette was stricken with a sudden illness that left her unable to walk. And it's really, really sad. I mean, this lady, I think, is the epitome of positiveness, a true patriot. And she's battling this illness. And unfortunately, because of how sudden this was, there are some costs now that both Rob and she are incurring. And something like building a wheelchair ramp, you know, because the house wasn't the wheelchair accessible at the time, you know, but, you know, she still has to get around, and she does. And I was listening to her show the other day, the May 31st show, and you never know it. I mean, she is so upbeat all the time. So Holger, along with another individual, started a GoFundMe-type page, and it's under Gives and Go. Gives and Go, GIVESEND Go.com. And you can give any amount. It's to support mobility for Suzette and Rob. And this is what is listed on the Give, Send, Go page. Our friend Suzette from Southern California has been battling with a medical issue that has cost her the use of her legs, and she's currently using a wheelchair to get around. This has created a dilemma for upgrading the home for Suzette and Rob. While we certainly are hopeful, and your prayers would be welcome, that progress will be made to see Suzette gets back full mobility. Your donations will help this woman and her family gain mobility and access to so much that we all take for granted. Anything you can do would be so greatly appreciated. The goal is to raise $2,500. At this point today, they've raised $625, and the page just got started this past weekend. So thank you to Holger for taking the time, for putting this together, and really, you know, because we care about this lady. And she is so positive. She is such a patriot. Anything you can do will be greatly appreciated. Any denomination will be accepted. So we'll put the link in the chat room, but the link is also on our episode info page. And, you know, please feel free to click on that and donate. So, and please keep Rob and Suzette in your thoughts and prayers as well. She truly deserves it. That's unbelievable. I mean, I don't know what kind of, you know, all of a sudden you get stricken with an illness and you can't walk. I mean, golly, just, oh my gosh.
How do you, going through that, thinking about everything that's involved scares the crap. It's a wake up call, I tell you. Very scary.
The breaking news, Prime Minister Boris Johnson of Britain survived the no confidence vote. He will remain in office for the duration of his term. The vote, 211 to 148, fell short of the simple majority of Tory lawmakers to oust Boris Johnson as party leader. Basically, Johnson and his aides threw parties at 10 Downing Street during COVID, violating their own governmental edicts. Rules for thee, but not for me. So a vote of no confidence was brought forth, and he survived it. So it'll be interesting to see what happens in the next election, if in fact the conservatives maintain their majority, and who would be tapped as the next prime minister of Great Britain.
Well, I don't know what to think about it. I'm not crazy about him one way or the other, but we know who he is, what he is, so I think he's on the more right than left, so we'll see. Maybe he'll get less squishy now that he eked out a win.
Maybe get a better haircut.
Maybe. makes Trump's hair look good.
Yes, it does. There's another guy who ridiculed Trump. The anti-American Democrat Party, the anti-American establishment on both sides of the aisle, have just hired TV producers to orchestrate their primetime coverage of the January 6th hearings. ABC TV James Goldston was hired by the January 6th commission, and taxpayers are paying dearly, and now to further their theatrics. So the theatrics of the institution known as the U.S. Congress is to dramatize and continue to create a false portrayal of Donald Trump, President Trump. The anti-American establishment has concocted and manufactured a false insurrection charge against President Trump. But the establishment does not want President Trump to run for re-election. The destructive Democrat Party, not sure they will be able to cheat one more time. They've been exposed and their funding is waning, although 2 years is still a lot of time for Obama to reorganize the dens of thieves. In the transcript of the January 6, 2021 speech, President Trump told the masses to walk peacefully to the Capitol, peacefully to the Capitol. Conversely, the anti-American establishment led by Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi had other ideas and other actions in place to disrupt the Electoral College vote. Remember, it was Nancy Pelosi who declined the request by President Trump for more security, additional police, and for National Guard to be in Washington, D.C. on January 6th. It was Pelosi and the Democrat Party who hired the help to disrupt the Electoral College vote because they knew there would be some members of Congress who were about to object and challenge their state's vote. The anti-American establishment could not have that. And after all, they executed the biggest cheat in American election history. Don't forget, in 2004, it was California Senator Dianne Feinstein who objected to one state's Electoral College votes. So this is not something that is unique to U.S. politics. Today, the same anti-American establishment has hired a TV producer to produce their bias and partisan January 6th show. Because it's all about taking out Donald Trump, because God forbid he should get the nomination in 2024 and run for president of the United States. The anti-American establishment knows they're fucked. So we'll see what happens with this commission. Obviously, not many organizations are saying anything about a TV producer being hired, you know, by this January 6th commission. Did you read any of that story, Al?
Yeah, I did, and it's politics, disgusting politics. I was there January 6th, and I can tell you there was close to a million people there that you don't hear about. And if that was an insurrection, of which I believe that six Proud Boys were charged with insurrection within the last 48 hours, which is not good. There were no guns. And granted, the people did break the law. They attacked cops, and they did break in, and they should pay for what they did. But as much as those guys broke in, on the other side of the Capitol Police were letting people in, opening the door and ushering them in. And it was on TV. We saw them inside the red robes looking like tourists.
Yeah.
How can you have both sides of a coin at the same event?
I don't know. And, you know, of course, nobody's asking that question. You know, nobody's asking or saying anything as to, you know, why with such an insurrection you had people who were staying inside the red velvet ropes. That's some insurrection. I mean, I can see the communists down in Cuba, you know, sitting there going, insurrection? That's no stinking insurrection. I mean, give me a break.
Yeah, I mean, there are families, a lot of older people. We're talking, there are people all the way from the park where Trump was speaking all the way to the Washington Monument, filled with people. And the purpose for walking over there was to show the Congress, all the people, close to a million people that came to hear President Trump speak, that we were the silent majority and they need to take notice. That was the purpose. Because it had already been known that Pence wasn't going to go ahead and sign. It was a done deal. And he's a traitor, and that was that. It was done. And like you said, the most important thing is Trump tried to get the guard out there, but Nancy Pelosi said no. And it's her job, it's her responsibility for security at the Capitol, not Donald Trump's.
Yeah, you know, you would think that Liz Cheney and Adam Kinzinger would have the intestinal fortitude to bring that part up, but you know they're part of that establishment, and they certainly will not chastise the Speaker of the House for sabotaging the January 6th event. I'm sorry, for not doing her duty and calling in the police. I mean, it's bad enough that you have an idea that maybe 200,000 to 300,000 people will show up for this. What would you call it? This gathering in Washington, D.C. It wasn't 200.
It was
300.
President Trump's last speech. It was just his last speech as
people
president.
From all around the United States, you know, descended upon Washington, D.C. Like you said, nearly a million people. Now, you know, at least President Trump had the foresight to request National Guard assistance. And it's really, you know, this whole thing stinks. It stinks. They had it in for this man from the very first day that he announced his candidacy. We've seen at ad nauseum what the FBI did, led by Peter Strzok and Lisa Page. We learned over the last month, you know, the role that Hillary Rodham Clinton actually played, you know, in spying on Trump, in creating a false and phony Russian dossier. And Alpha Bank was a ruse that was orchestrated by Hillary Rodham Clinton, and yet, you've got Warren and Kinzinger and all these other you know, chimpanzees of the Democrat Party all attacking Trump and nothing. And Hillary Rodham Clinton again gets away with being a fraud and a cheat.
Well, to me, this is nothing but a gaslighting event to keep President Trump, for the Marxist Democrats, to keep President Trump from running a successful campaign during the next election cycle for president. They want him shut out. They want him gone. They fear him. That's why they're doing this. And that's why they're slow rolling it, dragging it out as long as possible. And now they're bringing in Navarro. They've already arraigned Navarro. Sussman got undone because the judge allowed jurors who were clearly on Hillary Clinton's side giving donations, and the judge allowed these jurors to sit on the jury against Sussman, who was Hillary Clinton's lawyer. Hillary Clinton's lawyer, Sussman, won. He got himself undone, and I partly blame the Republicans for being weak and not playing this out in the court of public opinion, but trying to do it fair and square.
Yeah, exactly.
They're playing dirty. Yeah.
And they don't have to play dirty.
I still think he's an establishment guy, but that's just me.
Who?
Durham.
Oh, yeah. I have to agree with you on that. I mean, you don't make anything of the people that are sitting on the jury, and you've got a 12-person jury, and you've got 7 to 8 who donated to Hillary Rodham Clinton's campaign and you know, sympathize with her, and you expect to get a fair trial. And yet here we go. And then the attorney general authorizes the arrest of Peter Navarro at Reagan International Airport, Reagan National Airport. And not only did they handcuff him, but they tied his feet, and it's like, really, this is how severe they made it, and yet they treated him like a freaking drug lord that they just caught, it's incredible, and Navarro was pissed, and I don't blame him. See, but this is what happened under Obama Biden. It's happening the same way under Biden, Harris, and Obama. And, you know, they, the Democrat Communist Party, doesn't play fair. They don't care. They will bury it. You are the enemy. And the Republicans all play nice. Oh, you know, let's take the high road here. You know, they meant well. He got foghorn, leghorn from Kentucky. Well, you know, we have to do what's right for the people. And then you've got, you know, Kevin McCarthy. Well, we were just going to see how things play out. Yeah. Speaking of anti-Americans.
Because conservatives, that will happen to you or could happen to you.
Yep.
When you have the Department of Justice use the political arm for the Democrat Party, along with law enforcement, judges, they got it in for you, you're toast. And when the legal system falls apart and crashes at the seams and gets torn, the rule of law ceases to exist. And once you lose the rule of law, society begins to tear at the seams. And then that's how a cultural revolution begins. It's one step at a time, one incremental step. All parts of government start to fall apart. Inflation, energy, the courts, law enforcement, police letting criminals back out on the street, illegal aliens pouring over the border for potential Democrat voters down the road. It's not just one thing. It is everything happening right before our eyes. And the Republican Party leadership asleep at the switch.
Yeah, and speaking of anti-Americans, did you hear the latest soundbite from buffoon Biden on gas prices? And I'm going to apologize to the listeners for playing this babbling buffoon Biden, the liar in chief. But here's a clip, 13 seconds. I couldn't take any more of it because you just know that Biden is, first of all, I'm not sure he could stay up that late after 13 seconds. But here we go. Here's Biden with regards to flipping a switch or clicking a switch?
There's a lot going on right now, but the idea we're going to be able to, you know, click a switch, bring down the cost of gasoline is not likely in the near term, nor is it with regard to food.
Now, the idea that we can just click a switch to bring down, you know, the cost of gasoline and food is not likely in the near term, which is blatantly false. Because on January 20th, 2021, with the click of a switch, a stroke of a pen, bonehead Biden took America off of energy independence to total dependency for energy, just like Germany, just like Japan, Taiwan, UK, all of Europe for that matter. A plan to take America down from America first to making America mediocre again, or even worse. Mama, make America mediocre again. Bonehead Biden did this. Joe Obama's allegiance to the anti-American extreme environmental green scam movement is costing each and every American dearly. Our seniors work their entire lives and is supposed to be enjoying retirement. They're feeling the pain. Their retirement, their social insecurity stipends are not keeping up with the rapidly rising cost of inflation. It was Joe Obama who single-handedly took America off of energy independence. Joe Obama flipped that switch to kill the American dream and make Americans dependent and subservient to the government. High gas prices and high food prices go hand in hand. Because of rising gas prices and rising over 250% since January 20th, 2021, it causes transportation costs to rise excessively. The cost of fuel prices raise the cost of doing business. You like your DoorDash or pizza delivery or grocery delivery? Restaurants receiving goods, shipping and transportation cost increases? Yes, you can flip a switch to bring gas prices down, to make America energy independent again, but Joe Obama will make sure that will not happen. We must feel the pain which Germany and Japan are feeling, and certainly America can no longer be the leader and supplier of the world's oil supply. Joe Obama is beholden and indebted to the extreme anti-American global climate change scam movement. One last note on climate change. Here is the founder of the Weather Channel, John Coleman, a meteorologist and a scientist. Coleman was being interviewed in 2014 by Brian Stelzer. In 7 short years, the radical anti-Americans are now in charge, and Joe Obama Biden is implementing this radical and extremism.
But first, a story you will see nowhere else this morning. It's about one of the biggest crises we face, climate change, and a media war over that crisis. Climate deniers, people who believe climate change is not happening in any meaningful way, are sometimes painted in the media as fringe characters, as kooks. So this might shock you. A man who co-founded the Weather Channel thinks climate change is a hoax. His name is John Coleman. Before launching the Weather Channel in the early 1980s, he was the original weatherman on Good Morning America. And after launching the channel, he was also a local weatherman in New York, Chicago, and San Diego. Now he's retired, but his recent open letter saying that climate change is, quote, not valid, got a lot of attention and landed him in prime time on Fox News. So what did the Weather Channel do? It very publicly disavowed him. After all, for those who believe that the climate is changing and fast, this is a life and death matter. I've said before here on Reliable Sources that I don't think there are two equal sides to climate change. The scientific consensus is that it's real. The debate is over what to do about it. And the press has to be careful about creating this notion of sides. But Coleman's platform as a co-founder of a channel dedicated to weather is unique, and so is the channel's declaration that it believes climate change is happening. So this morning, both players are here, Coleman and the CEO of the Weather Channel, David Kenney. First, let me bring in John Coleman. He's in San Diego this morning. Thank you for being here.
It's nice to be on CNN. Hello to all your viewers. I resent you calling me a denier. That is a word meant to put me down. I'm a skeptic about climate change, and I want to make it darn clear Mr. Kenney is not a scientist. I am. He's the CEO of the Weather Channel now. I was the founder of the Weather Channel, not the co-founder.
And I'm glad you did, because I am addicted to the Weather Channel. I watch a lot of cable news.
I'm talking now. Hold on just a minute. I'm not done. And CNN has taken a very strong position on global warming that it is a consensus. Well, there is no consensus in science. Science isn't a vote. Science is about facts. And if you get down to the hard, cold facts, there's no question about it. Climate change is not happening. There is no significant man-made global warming now. There hasn't been any in the past, and there's no reason to expect any in the future. There's a whole lot of baloney, and yes, it has become a big political point of the Democratic Party and part of their platform, and I regret it's become political instead of scientific, but the science is on my side.
I don't think we're going to come to a conclusion about the topic right here. What I do wonder, though,
is when
you see...
I know we're not, because you wouldn't allow it to happen on CNN, but I'm happy that I got on the air and got a chance to talk to your viewers. Hello, everybody. There is no global warming.
What I do wonder is when you see the government, when you see NASA, when you see other institutions say that 97% of climate scientists agree, do you think they're making it up? What I don't understand is how you square that.
Well, that's a manipulated figure, and let me explain it to you. The government puts out about $2.5 billion directly for climate research every year. It only gives that money to scientists who will produce scientific results that support the global warming hypothesis of the Democrat Party of position. So they don't have any choice. If you're going to get the money, you got to support their position. Therefore, 97% of the scientific reports published support global warming. Why? Because those are the ones the government pays for, and that's where the money is. It's real simple. But that doesn't mean it's right. That doesn't make it true. That only makes it bought and paid for. The money goes in circles.
I'm not a scientist, so I'm not going to try to refute you on the
facts. Well, that's
the
truth.
So I'll simply
so
say that the vast majority...
Please stand back from this issue and let the two sides be on the air. There are 31,000 scientists who have signed a petition that says it is not valid, that my position is correct. And we'll keep battling, and we will prevail in time, but I don't know if we'll do it in my lifetime.
I do hope viewers are Googling the data you're sharing, because I do think it's skewed. I have to say that. I want to ask you about the weather.
No, it's not true, and I hope you will go to the websites that present the papers that show that none of this alarmism about ice and heat waves and drought, none of it is happening.
Is the Weather Channel part of the conspiracy?
Well, the Weather Channel has bought into it. As I say it, they've drunk the Kool-Aid. But so has all the media. That's no big surprise.
Let me read to you what the channel said this week. Because
Weather Channel statement.
Well, let me read it to the viewers then. After you appeared on Fox, they did put out this statement distancing themselves from you. They said, Mr. Coleman does have a place in our company's history, and we appreciate the contributions that he made more than 30 years ago. However, we want to be clear, John Coleman is no longer affiliated with our company. How did you feel to see them disavow you in that way?
Well, no problem. I mean, you know, that's all accurate. And the statement that's on their website, which they reissued this week,
right,
was written back in 2007. And that's a rather reasonable, warm statement. It's not full of alarmism. It's not full of the sky is falling. It's a pretty reasonable statement. It's not the programming they put on the TV that's not reasonable. And you know, when they put on their climate geeks, those aren't scientists. Those are nuts.
You sound like a man disappointed.
They never put on a real skeptical scientist. They don't give us any spot on their channel. That's too bad that they don't.
You sound like a man disappointed by the channel that you helped create.
Oh, I'm terribly disappointed. I created a channel to give people their weather, tell them what the weather is now and what it's going to be where they live and in their region, and keep them posted on the weather and serve a real purpose. And that channel has been totally distorted and become strange as it can be.
Well, John, thank you for being here this morning and sharing your views with us.
Well, I thank you for letting me on CNN. I had my say, and it was great fun.
Brian Stelter couldn't get off fast enough. Stelter. But there's, hey, you know what? It's worth playing that interview, because we have now a man who's in the White House who is beholden to this extreme climate change view, this globalist, global warming scam. this climate change scam. And as a result of that, we're now seeing, you know, gas prices at $5 a gallon, $6, $7, $8 a gallon. You've got diesel fuel, which is the fuel that tractor trailers need to run to transport goods and goods around the United States. And in Florida, it's $5.50 a gallon. In some places across the United States, it's $7 a gallon. Now, these people can't eat this. They have to pass their cost on, all for being duped with this climate change scam meant to extract trillions. We're talking trillions of dollars out of the U.S. Treasury. Over the next, 10 years, they're estimating $4 trillion to be extracted from the U.S. Treasury to fund this climate change scam, this ruse. We're talking about $81 trillion over the next 80 years. And that's the new God. That's the new religion with the left wing. They've removed God from their politics. They removed God from their platform, or at least they tried to, the Democrat Communist Party in America. And they supplanted it with Mother Earth and climate change being their new religion. And now the attitude of this Biden-Harris-Obama regime is, well, one way to combat these rising gas prices is to buy an electric car. That was Pete Buttigieg's. Fuck you, Pete. Many people can't afford to go in debt by $50,000 to buy an electric. And what happens with scenarios that happened last month in California? Or 4 months ago, 5 months ago, because of the excess use of electricity, the state of California asked citizens to stop using their electric cars. Don't charge as much. Really? Don't charge your electric cars? Oh, so what do we do? What do we do? Now, I don't have enough juice in my electric vehicle because you're now limiting my utilities, my ability to charge my vehicle, but you want me to go out and buy an electric car. You have immediately taken off Americans off of fossil fuels, all for your ruse, your climate change ruse. And you can't just click a switch to start, you know, the gas flowing again. I mean, you did click that switch to terminate it. You did click that switch to take America off of energy independence and make America dependent once again. So it's worth noting that in 2014, John Coleman, the founder, not the co-founder, the founder of the Weather Channel, who is a meteorologist and a scientist, told it like it is. And here we go. Here we go. We have the left wing in America selling the American people out, selling we the people out to this global climate scam. Paris Accord. President Trump took us out of the Paris Accord. And what is the first thing the bumbling buffoon Biden did? Joe Obama put us right back into the Paris Accord, which means that over the next 80 years, $80 trillion estimated will come out of the U.S. Treasury. We're not talking about the rest of the world. We're just talking about the United States of America. And in 15 short months, we've gone from $1.80 a gallon on the average to $4.75 a gallon for gas. $6.99 a gallon in some parts of the United States, $7 a gallon. Busting we the people's budgets. Killing senior citizens. And we're not even talking about heating oil. Heating oil go up three times. Americans paying three times as much for heating oil as they did in 2020. My sister, in December of 2020, paid $340 to fill their oil tank. They just refilled it not more than 2 months ago, $940. That's a $600 increase. This is how Joe Obama and his radical regime is killing the American people. Oh, well, there's no end in sight. That's flippantly. So let's take it. And then Joe says, you know, combating and fighting inflation is my number one priority. What did Joe Obama do this past weekend? He went to Delaware and he swam in the Atlantic Ocean. And big F you to the American people. Oh, he's going to be on Jimmy Kimmel or some night show, okay? He's going to shuffle around. He'll say he'll repeat the sound bites, the meaningless sound bites, and the slogans, the empty slogans, and everybody will laugh and they'll applaud. And Jimmy Kimmel will kiss Biden's ass, depending on which Biden shows up. And again, the American people will be saddled with higher gas prices, higher food prices. We're saddled with empty shelves because there's a supply chain shortage. And all Joe Obama does is repeat the standard failed liberal slogans. It's Putin's fault. It's Putin's fault. It's your fault. It's your fault. It's Putin's fault. Hey, I just heard somebody on Newsmax today. The Russian-Ukraine war is 100 days, okay? Joe Obama has been in office for over 540 days. That's under the old math, that means that Joe Obama's been there 440 days. So it's his policies that are causing this. It was his policies that took America off of energy independence and made America dependent again. Don't buy these lies from Joe Obama, from Pete Buttigieg, from the Energy Secretary Granholm, who lies through her teeth. And then they have the audacity to say, well, one way that you can combat the rising cost of fuel is to buy an electric car. Unbelievable what we're seeing today. I mean, how much more anti-American can Joe Obama Biden get? We don't want to find out. But sadly, the Republican Party in name only has done nothing to challenge this guy. Oh, and even to make matters worse, what did Joe Obama do? He blamed Putin and he blamed the Republicans for not coming up with an alternative for fuel, for the rising cost of fuel. Can you believe this? This is the balls of the Democrat Party. They caused this. They caused what we are feeling today. $4.79 a gallon to fill up your car with gasoline. They caused this. But now we're going to blame the Republicans, the GOP, for not coming up with any type of plans. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, the Republicans are in the minority in both the House and the Senate. And correct me if I'm wrong, Nancy Pelosi has yet to allow Republicans to give any ideas and to implement any Republican strategies. Remember, it was the Democrat Party who stated to the Republicans when they were in the minority that you have to listen to the Democrats and you have to adhere to our policies as well. And now they're in the majority, the Democrats, and they don't even want to hear from the Republicans. But let's go ahead and go with a phony soundbite, an empty and meaningless soundbite, and blame the GOP for taking gas prices up from $1.88 a gallon to $4.79 a gallon. The GOP's fault. It's Putin's fault. When that imbecile in the White House, with the stroke of a pen on January 20th, 2021, took America off of energy independence. This is how shameless that this administration is. Al, this is how shameless Joe Obama Biden is. And you know, the willingness of the state-run media, the DNC state media, okay, being in the bag for this frail old fraud is absolutely sickening.
Well, Kamala Heels Up Harris said, quote, "We're all in the midst of a turning point. We have the technology to transition to a zero-emission fleet. Our administration, together, all of us, is working to make that possibility a reality. A zero-emission fleet is their goal." Jim Jordan said that Biden and Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen essentially lied to the American people when they claimed inflation was transitory, so Democrats could spend what they wanted. That was a big lie. Jordan explained that Yellen said this week, "We were surprised that we had this kind of inflation. We didn't really see it coming." And I'm like, how could you not see it coming? You spent like crazy. You paid people not to work, and you drove up the cost of energy. Yellen's claims, Jordan said, make clear that what is happening under President Biden is intentional.
Yes.
Is intentional. That means that he is winning. His policies. Don't think conspiracy. Think policies. And they're
you know, you mentioned there.
You just have to connect the dots.
You mentioned, well, let's connect the dots here, because you mentioned Heels Up Harris, okay, and going to a zero emissions fleet. Now, the one thing that the American people, that the Biden-Harris administration or regime makes sure of, they don't talk about what the cost is to the American people. So not only are we paying for it at the pump, and aren't we paying for higher taxes? Because if you make less than $400,000 a year, your taxes won't go up one dime. No, they're going to go up by $5,000. Okay, but if you're going to transition to a zero emissions fleet, that means the American taxpayers are paying for this transition. So we don't have the means yet to do so, but we're going to go ahead and do it anyways. We're going to spend the millions of dollars to transition to a zero emissions fleet at the cost of the U.S. taxpayer, because that's who funds the federal government, the U.S. taxpayer. You want to know what else? In Bigfoot's place on blogspot.com, great blogspot. I was reading it on Friday. There's an article, CNS News. This is Friday, June the 3rd. Number of government workers in the U.S. grew by 57,000 in May. 57,000 more employees in May. The U.S. taxpayer is getting hosed at the pump, and now we're taking it right up the wazoo, okay, with this administration, this regime, not administration, this regime is swelling the U.S. government. These aren't producers. These are leeches. And we've added 57,000 new employees to the U.S. government dole. This is incredible what's happening. This mindset by these failed liberal policies, by these failed communist policies, these failed Marxist policies are being rapidly implemented in the United States by the Joker in the White House and his handlers, because he is not smart enough to do this by himself. And when you look at the cast of characters inside the White House, it's the Obama regime regurgitated. And now it's on fast track. They are fucking the American people, and they're doing it quickly. They've increased just in the month of May, 57,000 people now have been added to the U.S. government. 57,000. We should be outraged by the fact that each and every month now, there's been an increase in the number of employees to the U.S. government, which the taxpayers fund. This regime is making sure that the American taxpayers are going to feel it for years to come. This, you know, this may sound insignificant, but it's not. This is quite troubling. Yellen stating that we didn't foresee the inflation. Bullshit, you didn't foresee it. And again, take no accountability for your actions. None. Take no accountability. A banker friend said he was, when he heard that Janet Yellen was going to be made Treasury Secretary, he almost lost his lunch. This is from a banker.
And well, she did get inflation wrong.
That she did.
Yeah, normally in the private sector, you would get fired or replaced for making such a huge mistake when you're the head economist. How could you not see inflation coming with the rampant spending alone? Just the spending. Trillions here, trillions there, billions going to Ukraine, for God's sake, three big payments.
Hey, this regime is doing exactly what they set out to do. You make no apologies. You hold no one accountable. Okay, and then you start distracting. You start distracting. You know, we were talking before the show, and also on Bigfoot's Place on blogspot.com, I was reading an article this past weekend from Gatestone Institute, and it hit me. It was like, wait a minute now. Hold on a second. www.bigfootsplace.blogspot.com. The interesting thing about the article that I was reading, it has to do with the word and the theme of this article, leak, L-E-A-K. Leaks seems to be the theme of the destructive Biden-Harris-Obama regime, leaking a draft at the Supreme Court a month ago. 1 month later, the leaker has still not been found, nor has it been she or he been identified. She, he, it, whatever it is, okay? 1 month later, the leaker has not been identified nor caught. Now, the Supreme Court of the United States has approximately 500 employees on the high side, which of course, each justice can hire up to 4 law clerks, and the chief justice can hire 5 law clerks. So that's 37 law clerks. Yet the FBI, the federal government, can identify out of 1 million people, can identify 700 people through facial recognition who was at the Capitol on January 6th, and then go to that respective state and arrest that individual and incarcerate them and violate their Sixth Amendment right. Yet 4 weeks later, with an employment status of 500 employees at the most, including 37 law clerks, they've not been able to catch the leaker of a draft. So getting back to the operative word of leak, Friday's Bigfoot blog included a Gatestone article, "Biden is no friend of Israel." At the time when tensions are really already running high between Iran and the West over the stalled nuclear talks, there are quite justifiable concerns in Israel that the leak will prompt Iran to exact revenge by attacking Israeli targets, even if later transpires that Israel was not responsible for the assassination of Colonel Saeed Khodai, senior commander of Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guard. In the Gatestone article, this is horrific. This is sedition. This is treason. And frankly, this is quite troubling. Once again, a Washington, D.C. administration, the Biden-Harris-Obama administration, seeks to undermine an ally. So they sought to undermine the Justice Department, the judiciary branch of government with the Supreme Court, by leaking a document. And now the same administration, the Biden-Harris-Obama administration, leaked a sensitive document that actually jeopardizes our ally, Israel. This administration undermined and sabotaged our ally, a conscious effort in executing a destructive foreign policy in aiding and abetting the enemy, which is the theocratic Islamic terrorist regime of Iran. Can you imagine a key ally in the Middle East with Israel? The real crime, one that represents a serious breach of longstanding intelligence sharing arrangements between the United States and Israel, is that one of Joe Biden's senior officials has been willing to betray the trust of such a close ally. This is in the article, "Biden is no friend of Israel." The timing of the leak also indicates an underlying willingness on the part of the Biden administration to undermine Israel when, in public, the White House is seeking to portray itself as an ally of Israel, as indicated by its recent seeming decision not to remove the IRGC, the Islamic Revolutionary Guard, from the U.S. list of designated terrorist organizations. You see, because the Biden-Harris regime speaks in meaningless soundbites and empty slogans. This administration is so corrupt. This regime is so fraudulent. And now they set their sights at not only embarrassing, but sabotaging Israel's sovereignty. An ally of the United States, our only true ally in the Middle East. What would be the motivation? And as for the motivation, it's unclear if the leak was deliberate. I would say the leak was deliberate. It's not a coincidence that just a month ago, there was a leak of the Supreme Court of a draft. And what did the Democrat Party do? Quickly, they mobilized. quickly, Nancy Pelosi made this about a concrete decision by the Supreme Court, which was absolutely false. And then subsequently, you have a leak that now undermines Israel's sovereignty. As for the motivation, it's unclear if the leak was delivered to harm Israel or from not fully appreciating the jeopardy it could potentially cause Israel, an act which reflects the Biden administration's profound lack of understanding as to what is at stake with the entire Iran issue. I'm going to disagree with that statement. I think the Biden-Harris-Obama administration fully understands what's at stake, and they purposely leaked this to undermine Israel. They purposely leaked it. I don't put nothing behind or beyond Obama. Obama is a cancer. Obama is one anti-American. Nothing better illustrates the Biden administration's deep-seated antipathy towards the state of Israel than leaking a highly classified material about the alleged role of Israeli intelligence playing in the assassination of a top-ranked Iranian terrorist. Antipathy, extreme dislike, aversion or repugnance, animus, bitterness, grudge, hostility, rancor. This clearly is a very good description of how the Obama-Biden administration treated Israel, and now the Biden-Harris-Obama administration is doing the same, undermining our only true ally in the Middle East. The current chimpanzee in the White House is carrying the same water for Obama and his contemptible anti-American holdovers inside this current regime of Biden-Harris-Obama. And for decades, Israel and the United States have enjoyed a unique intelligence-sharing relationship whereby the two countries share the most sensitive material on their respective intelligence, security, and military operations. Obama-Biden no doubt strained and undermined this relationship. It took President Trump to restore the trust and respect. And now, under the current destructive anti-American regime, the same saboteurs are back in power. And in just 15 months doing their part, not only to undermine U.S. foreign policy, but sabotaging our allies, the state of Israel. A leak, yet another leak under a Biden-Harris-Obama regime. The anti-American and anti-constitutional regime has no morals. They have no scruples as they undermine the judicial branch of government, the U.S. Supreme Court, with full intentions of causing civil unrest and for a distraction. To distract from an ailing and failing economy under bumbling Joe Biden. But Obama was not done there. American people are focused on domestic policies and social issues as we should be, but they wouldn't notice what Obama and his anti-American team of saboteurs were doing on the foreign policy front. Obama's intentional attack on Israel is frightening, and frankly, it's un-American. Imagine a president of the United States who actively and covertly undermines United States foreign policy. It's bad enough Israel is attacked on a daily basis by its so-called neighbors. Islamic jihad's calling for the destruction of a free country. But now you have the Obama regime negotiating with the Islamic theocratic terrorist country who seeks to destroy Israel, and they state it on a daily basis. Iran's view that Israel was behind the shooting will have strengthened, moreover, by leaking of a classified information by the Biden administration claiming Israel was responsible for the attack. The leaking of classified information. This is not the first time the Biden-Harris-Obama regime operates with malice against those they deem to be their enemy. Obama-Biden is a liar and an untrustworthy man, and Israel no longer trusts this fraud. I don't know what else to say on this. This is absolutely an egregious act by this administration. And you know, it has to send chills down the spines of the Israelis to know that they no longer can count on the United States of America.
Well, yeah, and it goes deeper than that because the Israelis right now are preparing to strike Iran once they get or already have nuclear weapons. And don't forget about the Abraham Accords either. You have the Sunni Muslims in the Middle East, Saudi Arabia, UAE, Bahrain, and Jordan. They are all part of the Abraham Accords, which has somehow managed to stick together. And the only reason that it stick together, in my opinion, is because the Sunni Muslims are so afraid of the Iranian Shia Hezbollah jihadis and their desire to wipe the Sunnis, take over Mecca and Medina, that they are siding with the Israelis to be their junkyard dog to take out Iran. And here we've got President Biden betraying Israel in favor of Iran. This is causing discomfort and disunity all throughout the Middle East.
Yeah, and you've got Joe Obama, whose mission, after being installed, is to undo everything Trump did. And we're seeing it at a rapid pace. We see it with energy on a daily basis, and now we're seeing it on the foreign policy front. The Abraham Accord was absolutely a brilliant program, a brilliant scheme, a brilliant plan. Trump recognized who the individuals were or where the impediment was. And once he pushed aside that impediment, he did forge a relationship. And that should be the ultimate goal, is peace in the Middle East. It's just peace. Now, obviously, we're not going to have peace with the Sunnis and the Shias, fighting one another. But for this administration to once again side with the theocratic, terrorist regime of Iran is just it's incredible. And reading further in this article, so he's subsequently been identified as the deputy head of Unit 840. Now he's talking about the colonel Kodei, who is the head of the IRGC, Iran's IRGC. He was head of Unit 840, which is tasked with conducting attacks against foreign targets, including against Israel. Western intelligence sources say Kodei was directly responsible for attempting terrorist attacks against Israelis, Europeans, and American civilians, as well as government officials from as far afield as Colombia, Kenya, Ethiopia, United Arab Emirates, and Cyprus. And Biden had the audacity to betray Israel? I mean, he's supporting assassinations against Israel, Israelis, Europeans, and Americans, civilians? Isn't that what it boils down to, by disclosing this? That's a hell of a betrayal, Al.
Scary trail.
Wow. Wow, oh my gosh, the Gatestone Institute really, really does amazing work. They hit it on the head. The story is written, but Biden is no friend of Israel, is written by Con Coughlin. It's June 3rd. I urge you to go to bigfootsplace.blogspot.com, and you can pull the article up there, and it's absolutely incredible. It's very chilling what was done and what this administration did. According to detail report into the killing, the New York Times, an administration official claims that Israel provided Washington with top secret briefing that it was behind the killing. And the Biden-Harris-Obama regime discloses this to Iran. This is unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Well, it's grounds for an impeachment.
Yeah, I mean, wow. The anger felt by Israel's entire security establishment about the leak were reflected in comments made by Israeli member of Knesset Ben Barak, the chair of the Knesset Foreign Affairs and Defense Committee, who is also a former deputy head of Mossad. Speaking on Israel's radio 103 FM, Barak declared, We have very many close relationships and a lot of cooperation between us, which all depend on trust. And when it's violated in some way, then it damages further cooperation. The one thing that our allies will take from this, including Israel, that Biden can't be trusted. And, you know, it's pretty sad when you can't trust the United States of America, which had Israel's back since 1948. And to all the American Jews, I'm not even talking about the Israeli Jews, because the Israeli Jews understand that the Democrat Party is the enemy of Israel. But to the American Jews, this is what you support. By supporting Obama Biden and Kamala Harris and Barack Obama, this is what you get. The undermining of the state of Israel, the undermining of our ally, sabotage and betrayal. And I don't know what it's going to take for American Jews to wake up and to hold the Democrat Party accountable for this betrayal. But the state of Israel now can't trust the United States of America while Obama Biden is sitting in the White House. That is sad. That is troubling. They should charge that bastard with treason. That is absolutely sick on so many fronts.
Mm-hmm. We also have 115,000 illegal immigrants, illegal aliens, heading towards the U.S. as we speak. It's one of the largest migrant caravans of all time is making its way to the U.S.-Mexico border. What will President Biden do? My guess is he going to let them all in?
He's going to send the border czar down there. What are you kidding? Come on.
Heels up. Is she gone? I don't know. Maybe she's AWOL.
My guess is
Biden's going to let a lot of these illegals in, whether we know about it or not. And I think it's part of his plan, obviously, as it has been in the past, based on past policies, is to let these illegal aliens in. Eventually, one day, they're going to get the right to vote, and they're going to be Democrat voters majority-wise. And that's their plan, is they're going to have majority Democrat voters, and they're going to control the House, all the elections going forward. Now, these migrants, these are not our friends. You know, these illegal alien horde, this herd that's coming, Venezuela, no friend of the United States. Cuba, communist, no friend of the United States. And then Latin America as well.
Yeah, well, not just Ecuador. Latin and Central. Yeah, I was going to say Ecuador, yeah. and where else?
Venezuela and Cuba.
Yeah, but this is an invading
horde.
But we also, where was Daniel Ortega from? The Sandinistas?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, really. I mean, that was the other, what was it, not Panama, what was the other country down in Central America? I can't think.
Nicaragua?
Yeah, Nicaragua. Isn't that where Daniel Ortega is from? Yeah.
Panama.
Yeah. No, he's from Nicaragua. So you have the Sandinistas. So you have Nicaragua, Venezuela, Cuba, and Ecuador. Wow.
And Nicaragua is part of these three countries whose authoritarian rulers have been left out of this week's summit, but they're sending all their people in. You got to ask the timing on this. And what is Biden going to do? The Republicans need to start putting out there that if these illegal aliens – are allowed into the United States from these three enemy countries, then they will file they'll file impeachment proceedings. They need to put it out there now before they get here.
Yeah, you asked what will Biden do, and I'm looking for my notes here. So several months ago, as probably four or five months ago, this is June, so it was probably around February or March, actually. So my cousin lives in Central Florida, and he was stating that let me see here. Hold on a second. Okay. The Biden-Harris regime in the middle of the night transported something like 243 illegal aliens to a city called Maitland, Florida. And they set up these 243 illegal aliens in the middle of the night at an extended stay hotel. And he said that this area that is – I asked him about, you know, who's the congressman in that area. He said Stephanie Murphy. And isn't it ironic that nothing was said? He said there was nothing in the media. There was no reports. There was no outrage. There were no Republicans, you know, in the state of Florida who objected to it other than Governor DeSantis stating he was going to send them the illegals back. He was turning back buses, turning them away. And this one got in through the middle of the night. And literally, he says 4 o'clock in the morning, these buses roll into the extended stay hotel. Now, you have an issue with these people not speaking English. You have an issue with monetary. Each were given a stipend to live. They were their hotel rooms were paid for, their extended stay was paid for. They were given EBT cards. They were given some other stipends in order to live in the middle of the night, 4 o'clock in the morning. Now, this was just Maitland, Florida, 243. Where else in the United States did this happen? So you said, what will the Biden administration do? Biden will do exactly what he did back in February or March. And in the middle of the night, they'll send, you know, a number of illegal aliens to Massachusetts like they've done. They'll send them to New York. They'll send them to Iowa. They'll send them to North Dakota. They'll send them to Florida. They'll send them to Texas. They'll distribute them all around the United States. In the meantime, you've got this administration now is swelling the Medicaid budgets in the states. And as a matter of fact, this is money that's not been budgeted by states. Medicaid is state funding. And most states work on fiscal years, if I'm not mistaken. And now you're dumping in thousands of individuals, illegal aliens who don't speak the language, who are going to rely on social funding, including Medicaid funding, which is also funded by the taxpayer. And if you have a situation where in the state of Florida, $21 billion is earmarked for, let's just say $21 billion is earmarked for Medicaid funding, and you have the shenanigans being pulled by the federal government and dumping illegal aliens into your state, what happens when you run out of money? What happens? Where does the money come from? Because in the state of Florida, the state can't run at a deficit. They have to balance the budget. Isn't that a novel idea? You have to balance the budget every year. Unlike the federal government that pisses away taxpayer money ad nauseum. Well, $40 billion to Ukraine here. You know, there's $4 trillion spending package here, $3.2 trillion there, $1.2 trillion to watch how shrimp mate. But the state of Florida has to run on a balanced budget. And I believe it runs from what, October to September? October 1 to September 30th. So in the month of February, let's just say February, you dumped 243 illegal aliens on the lap of the state of Florida, which has already budgeted, you know, their Medicaid outlay. I'll tell you, You want to talk about a destructive man, a destructive mindset. And certainly, Joe Biden is not doing this on his own. I believe that the man is incapable of doing it on his own. He doesn't have the mental capacity to do it on his own. And that's why he brought in the Susan Rice, and he brought in John Kerry's, and he brought in the other broad, I forgot her name, used to be the Samantha from used
Powers?
To be in the Powers, yes. And how many others are held over from the Obama regime? Oh my God, Al. And, you know, it's really a tough question to even ask is what will Obama or what will Biden do next? It's like, oh my God, you don't know what he'll do. You know, and you've got the Governor Abbott from Texas sending busloads of illegal aliens to D.C. and dumping them on the Capitol steps. They don't care. This administration doesn't care. And now you've jeopardized the citizens of Washington, D.C. who are residing there. You've jeopardized their lifestyle. Because when these illegal aliens end up having nothing, they get desperate. And when they get desperate, they turn to violence. And now you've got anarchy. You have no rule of law. And so it turns out that with the Democrat Party, with the establishment, with the Uniparty, the term rule of law is simply a slogan meant to say that you care. Well, portray you care. Excuse me. Not say. Portray you care.
Well, Biden's new, the White House new supply chain czar, her name is Betty Crimmins, and she's a leading advisor to President Joe Biden on supply chains. She's an alum of several World Economic Forum climate change initiatives, who additionally served as a former fellow in a think tank chaired by Hunter Biden. Betty Crimmins, whose LinkedIn profiles reveal that she's held positions of Director for Sustainable Supply Chains at the White House since February 2022, has overseen the U.S. government ongoing supply chain issues exacerbated by politics, mandated vaccines for many Americans, workers, and truckers. The Washington, D.C.-based left-leaning foreign policy network featured Biden's son, Hunter Biden, on its board since 2011. So you've got a World Economic Forum Marxist who is running our supply chain, and that's why part of why it's so much trouble. But this is all by design. Why would you bring her in if she's part of the World Economic Forum unless you have a bigger objective, which we've already touched on with more than one or two data points?
You see, that's huge. That is huge. The World Economic Forum. She's with the World Economic Forum.
Mm-hmm.
That is huge. That is huge.
This news came from Trevor Loudon, who is an expert. He is a subject matter expert on communists within the United States, operating within the United States, within politics and the bureaucracy, both communists and Marxists. So thank you, Trevor Loudon, for exposing this, because we never would have heard about it anywhere else, quite frankly.
Well, okay, so we have a supply chain. Now we have a supply chain. What is it? What is she called? Supply chain?
Czar. She's
czar?
Like Kamala Harris, who is the southern border czar.
So what does the Secretary of Commerce, Gina Raimondo, doing? What is she doing? I mean, this falls under the Secretary of Commerce purview. And talk about supply chain and transportation. Now you got Pete Buttcheeks Buttigieg, okay, Buttigieg, Secretary of Transportation. What is he doing? Why do we have these two secretaries, okay? Why do we have these individuals, and why aren't they held accountable? Just like you had a media who trashed every one of Donald Trump's, President Trump's secretaries, whether it was agriculture, commerce, labor, every one of them was trashed. Yet the Secretary of Commerce, Agriculture, Tom Vilsack, did anybody know Tom Vilsack was a Secretary of Agriculture aside from Bigfoot? Huh? I mean, what is this guy doing? We have an interruption of food supply in the United States. What is the Secretary of Agriculture doing? We don't know. We haven't heard from him. What about the Secretary of Commerce? We have empty shelves. We have a supply chain issue. We have a baby food formula shortage as a result of the incompetence, or I shouldn't say that, the direct sabotaging by the Biden-Harris-Obama regime. What did Gina Raimondo do? What has she done? Raimondo. So the Secretary of Commerce is in charge of commerce in the United States. What has she done? Nothing. Another failure. We have the Secretary of Labor, Marty Walsh. What has he done? 57,000 jobs created, filled by the U.S. federal government just last month. What has he done? Nothing. Nothing. Pete Buttigieg, Secretary of Transportation. Transportation. What has he done? Oh, I'm sorry. He might be on maternity leave right now. He's breastfeeding his child. That's more important than the American people. You took this job, okay, to fulfill. And in the meantime, you failed. We have, what is it? What's the gas prices? $4.75 a gallon, $5 a gallon, $6.99 a gallon. Oh, speaking of energy, Secretary of Energy, Jennifer Granholm, another abject failure. The former governor of Michigan. Oh, well, you know, Germany and Japan are feeling the pinch too. Who gives a shit about Germany and Japan? You want to click that switch now? Click that switch and make America energy independent once again. But see, that's not the goal and the mission of this administration, Al. It's not the goal and mission of this administration. The mission of this administration is to put America on a globalist level and make sure that we feel the pain that Japan and Germany feel. Not be independent, but be subservient to the world body. And who does Obama bring? I mean, who does Biden bring in? Betty Crimmins, who has extensive climate change initiatives with the world body. Nothing will get done.
Right. The World Economic Forum seeks to abolish private property ownership, has exploited issues like COVID-19 and climate change for its controversial Great Reset agenda. So she is a firm believer in these Marxist ideas, and she is heading up our supply chain.
Unbelievable.
Yeah,
unbelievable.
Where's Rona McDaniels? Why isn't Rona McDaniels tweeting about this?
Yes.
Worthless. Rona McDaniel, worthless. I expect our side to fight this tooth and nail all along the way. But it's just not happening.
This is just one failed policy after another. One failed policy after another. The chairman of the Council of Economic Advisors, Dr. Cecilia Rouse, a failure. They have failed the American people. In 15 short months, they have failed the American people. And then they blame everybody else. But yet they bring in the World Economic Forum, you know, extremists like Betty Crimmins. Oh, well, we're going to tackle the supply chain. Yeah, Gina Raimondo, the Secretary of Commerce, she doesn't know anything about trains or supplies. So we'll have to bring in, you know, I'm surprised they didn't bring in a Chinese person. Surprise! It's unbelievable what we're seeing out of this regime, out of this makeup of individuals. I mean, and of course, the biggest liar of the bunch is the Secretary of Homeland Security, Alejandro Mayorkas. You have 15,000 caravan now coming into America, coming to America from Venezuela, Cuba, Ecuador, and Nicaragua, and Alejandro Mayorkas will do absolutely squat. He'll give you some sound bites. He'll give the same taglines. He'll lie. He'll look at you and he'll lie. And that's all this administration does is lie.
Yep. Remember when they had they had an illegal immigrant herd, an illegal alien herd that came through while President Trump was in office. President Trump got on the horn with the president of Mexico and said, yeah, you'll take your police and you'll break this up. They're not coming to the border, to our border. And the president of Mexico says, no, we're not really going to do anything, President Trump. He said, okay, fine, I'm going to cut off all your money. And then what happened?
Amigo,
Sending troops to the border, amigo.
Yeah, we will send our military police, and then we will stop this horde. They will not come to the border. We'll keep them on our side. And the herd broke up, never to be heard from again.
Just what a president's supposed to do, protect your homeland.
Right.
Just what the Homeland Security chief is supposed to do, protect your homeland.
Right. Didn't the president take an oath to defend the borders of the United States of America, defend our country from threats both foreign and domestic, and to keep our borders safe? That's a dereliction
yes.
of duty. I
dereliction
didn't cause
of duty.
For impeachment. And they sure as hell better threaten it now they need to threaten it now before this herd comes and gets any closer. And then that'll put President Biden on notice that if he does not do the right thing, that he will have to face an impeachment charge.
Well, it's not going to happen under Nancy Pelosi.
No.
I mean, she had utter contempt for President Trump and his pro-American
yep.
policies. And now you have an anti-American globalist in that was installed to the White House. The oath
mm-hmm.
of office for the executive office is, I do solemnly swear that I will faithfully execute the office of the President of the United States and to the best of my ability preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States. Well, obviously, this bum in the White House has no abilities, and the best of his ability is it's meek at best. So he's actually lowered the standards to less than mediocrity. So he can say that I am executing my oath of office because I will do it to the best of my ability. And they know they have somebody who doesn't have the ability. He never did. There was always a reason why Joe Biden was never the nominee by the Democrat Party. It was very clear why he was never the nominee. Yeah, let's not talk about all the food plants burning. Yeah, right. That's right, Boyd. Go ahead.
Well, he is there, so we have to discuss it. And then you go to Nigeria, and Christians are getting killed, murdered left and right.
Oh, man.
I mean, we talk about it week after week because there's Christians
yes.
getting murdered every week. This week was especially bloody with scores killed and injured. And found out, that Nigeria has the toughest gun laws, that citizens are not allowed to own guns in Nigeria. So
really?
The only people that have the guns are the government and the jihadis. And who are they killing? The Christians. And the Christians can't defend themselves. The church is silent. Pastors here in the United States are silent about the Christian persecution. It's not the only people that are talking about are Raymond Ibrahim, who is another subject matter expert on this, and us.
Yeah, I read Raymond Ibrahim's article that he wrote at Bigfoot's Place. Nigeria death toll now over 50 in Muslim attack on Catholic Church during Sunday Mass. And, of course, the U.N. is absolutely silent. It's a clear violation of U.N. Resolution 1618, which means nothing to the Organization of Islamic Cooperation, which Nigeria is a member of. It has been a member since 1975, I believe it is. So Nigeria has violated U.N. Resolution 1618, which the Organization of Islamic Cooperation seeks to impose on the Western civilization, and you have 50 dead Christians at a Catholic church during Sunday Mass. Didn't hear the Pope, although the Pope is ailing. Haven't heard anything from the Vatican. Haven't heard anything from the United Nations or the Organization of Islamic Cooperation, the OIC. Everyone's silent. And as you said, they have the strictest gun laws in Nigeria, except Boko Haram, who is behind this, or another Islamic terrorist organization. But didn't they call it something else, Al? Didn't they label this terrorist attack something else?
Hmm. What do they name it?
It was weird. It was an odd, they called it a cult attack or something of that nature.
Oh, cult.
Yeah. It's they didn't call it an Islamic terrorist friends. Attack on Christians. They called it like a cultist attack. But I believe it was the Fulanis.
Yeah, they're responsible for most of that. For the herdsmen. They're calling it like a civil war, but it's religious.
Yes, it is. Totally.
The Muslims want to kill the Christians. That's all it is. Christians don't fight back. They take it.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh.
Well, and the UN, like you said, is worthless. Well, there's dozens of mostly the North Koreans are now taking over the rotating presidency of the UN-backed Conference on Disarmament. As the North Koreans are firing missiles into the air in a provocative manner.
You can't
Welcome
make this
to
stuff
the
up.
Loony bin. Yep. Beam me up, Scotty.
Well, we got 3.5 minutes left. This is unbelievable. I just look up at the clock. It's like, holy cow. Tomorrow night we have Eric from Kafira Stay with the Cross and the Crescent at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. Wednesday, Hank Jones and Polly Sports. I'm sure I'll be talking a little more, a bunch of sport issues that come up, including the woke and Major League Baseball. It's unbelievable what's happening in Major League Baseball. They can't do any more to turn people off than they continue to do. This wokeness is a cancer. So check out Hank Jones and Polly Sports. I believe it's at 5:30 Eastern Time. Thursday, Paul Sutliff with the Sutliffian Report. He's also the author of Cancer of Civilization and Jihad. You can purchase that book on Amazon.com or at Paul's website. Friday, Andrew Harrod with Conservative Casual Friday, 12 p.m. Eastern Time. Saturday, Minister Stama Daktak and the beautiful Christy revealing the truth about Islam, 10 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on Global Patriot Radio. And Sunday, Eric from Kafira Stand is back with the Real Interfaith Dialogue at 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Please check out Eric's show. It's a great show if you want to understand and learn about Christianity, Judaism, and Islam. It's a great interfaith dialogue show. And Monday, Al and I will be back at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. Please keep GC in your prayers from Airwaves America. Andy, Southern Sense Talk Radio, Friday, 1 to 4 p.m. with a great sidekick, author Curtis Bennett. Chief Simple Facts of Life, Tuesday, 3 p.m. Pacific Time on Blog Talk Radio. Simone Nicole Show, Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, Spreaker.com. If you want a break from politics and religion, check out the Simone Nicole Show. It's a great self-help show. Joshua does a fantastic job. Thursdays, Archie Russo of Real Talk Radio. Great getting 8 p.m. Eastern Time. Thursdays, go to ArjorieRusso.com. She has some great guests on there, and she does a fantastic job. She has 3 guests. I really love Audrey's shows. Alan, I'll be back next Monday evening, and we wish you all the best. Remember, the Greatest Generation. Not in a shy way. Our World War II veterans. Today's D-Day, 78 years ago. June 6, 1944. Just a absolute, just heroic day. The turning point of the European campaign during World War II. So, now any party shots?
Adios, amigos. See you at the border.
Yeah, I want to say goodbye to Bigfoot. Go to bigfootsplace.blogspot.com, www.bigfootsplace.blogspot.com. Bring it on, boy. Ducky Northwest. Hi, guys. See you, the Alaskan boy. And I want to say hello to Sue from New Mexico. You guys stay well out there. Be safe. Love you, Sue. You guys take care. See you guys next week. Thank you so much for joining us. Ciao, everybody.
It was my way.
right on the button.
You got skills.
I can read a clock. That was fast. You know what? I looked up and I saw 5 minutes and 39 seconds left. I looked at it again. I thought it was 25 minutes. It was 5 minutes. What the heck?
This week is particularly busy and not a good way.
Yeah, you ain't kidding. Yeah, it's really, Holzer texted me and I didn't see it. It was a satanic attack. That's what it was called.
Satanic.
Yeah, they called the attack in Nigeria a satanic account, satanic attack. No more an Islamic terrorist attack, but a satanic attack. That is unbelievable. You know, this is what they're calling the Fulanis now, Boko Haram, satanic.
Satan? I don't know.
Yeah.
It's journalistic malfeasance.
Boy, you ain't kidding. Absolutely incredible.
Well, those who control the ink control the power. Think about it.
Hey, that's true. Absolutely true. And we're seeing it.
Yeah, imagine. I mean, every week if they reported these Muslim attacks on Christians every week, you would see the Muslims on the defensive like never before. Instead, the media is now playing cover for them. And then you got President Biden betraying Israel.
Yeah, and did you see anything in the media on this? The only place I read it was the Gates Stone Institute.
No, I didn't see it in my local paper.
I didn't either. I didn't even see it in Investor's Business Journal.
Yeah.
Didn't even see it.
They're usually pretty good. Oh.
Hey, every day, the DNC-controlled state media made it their point, and Larry Elder said it in the 2000 Mules documentary. Every day, this media was attacking Donald Trump, President Trump, and his administration every day. And today, conversely, you have an individual who is nothing but a cancer on this republic, and they are sanitizing this guy. They're sanitizing his family. Just the mention of corruption, or to allude that Donald Trump was in bed with Alpha Bank, that was enough for the media to go absolutely apocalyptic and go after this guy ad nauseum. And now you actually have a scenario where you have Joe Biden and his son, okay, reaping tens of millions of dollars from foreign countries, including communist China, and not a word from this media. Reluctantly, the DNC state-run New York Times finally had to come out and say that the Hunter Biden laptop was real. But yet, has anything happened? I mean, can you imagine if Eric Trump or Donald Trump Jr. had engaged in this type of salacious activity, what the media would have done to those two men?
Even the whiff.
Yes. And then you have Tony Bobulinski, who absolutely corroborates what was done, and that Biden met Vice President Biden met with these people. Biden absolutely lies through his teeth, and now it's confirmed through White House records that in fact Vice President Biden met with Hunter Biden's business associates, foreign business associates. They even got a paper trail of emails.
Mm-hmm.
This corruption is incredible. What we're seeing, absolutely incredible. And the sanitizing of this man, the effort that's being put forth to control this guy and to sanitize Biden, and his actions are disgraceful. It's disgusting. It's un-American, and it's despicable.
Yeah. Well put. I don't know what the solution is.
get somebody with some balls in some key places, like maybe the RNC. You know?
That would help. But apparently help. They're part of the problem, too, because the establishment is doing nothing. They're quiet.
Yeah, you know, Alex,
silence is consent.
But it's safer to say nothing that in hopes that you'll get in power and allow the Democrats to dig their own graves. I mean, let's not be a Trump and be mean, okay? Because people don't like mean tweets.
Right. And then once we are in power, then these same establishment opponents go, well, we don't want to rock the boat. We want to make sure that we get elected in the next election, so we're just going to lay low. That's all they do is lay low.
Lay low. Yep.
Play it smart.
I tell you, I look at some of the previous videos of Trump while he's president, giving impromptu, you know, press conferences, answering the media, standing before the media, answering questions. And conversely, you know, the media was all pissed off about, you know, Trump not making himself available. And day after day, when he'd make that trek on the White House lawn, he would go right down the line and he'd answer questions and he'd take media questions. Conversely, you've got this little chimpanzee in the White House. He can't come out of his own shell. But now he's going to be, you know, he's going to be focused on tackling the inflation in America. Joe, what'd you do this weekend? Well, went to the beach. Oh, okay. That's really good tackling. You know, you really tackled, you know, that wave, not the wave of inflation, but the wave of water. You know, this is what this empty suit does.
Yeah. I don't think our republic will survive. I hope.
I hope too. I really do. I've never been one to doubt the ability of the American people, but I'll tell you, they are creating such an atmosphere right now that I'm not sure. You know, there's too many. This swamp runs so deep in Washington, D.C., the people that you thought you can count on, and because we're sold this two-party system that the Republicans really care. And looking back, I read another article in Bigfoot, so I just read it, not the whole thing, but Paul Ryan was talking about they should have impeached Trump. We should have done it. We should have impeached him. It's like, really? You know, you had an opportunity – okay, to transform America in the correct way and restore America's greatness back to, you know, capitalism and free enterprise, which built this country. And without your help, Donald Trump still attained that energy independence and people looking to America for natural gas, for oil and an American economy that was heating up. But boy, I'll tell you, I think the World Economic Forum really didn't like that. I don't think China liked that. I don't think the world body liked that. And you're still sitting there talking about impeachment over what? Over what? You have a real quid pro quo with Biden admitting diarrhea of the mouth that he and Obama, you know, held Ukraine hostage over a $1 billion loan guarantee and got a special prosecutor fired. Trump wants to know about corruption. Why did you allow this to happen? Tell me, Zelensky, what happened? And Trump then is impeached for that? And you've got Paul Ryan, that rhino, would have gone along with that? I it's just reprehensible. And then we find out that the entire Russian collusion from Alpha Bank, which started the whole thing, was all concocted by the Hillary Clinton campaign. And it was endorsed by Barack Hussein Tatoro Obama and his administration. Well, my head's about to explode. It's like, where the hell is anybody in Congress just absolutely talking about this every freaking day? And then Sussman gets off. Oh, my God.
Are you surprised? I mean, really?
No, I was not surprised. I was not surprised. When you told me that there were 7 of the 12 jurors were supporters of Hillary Rodham Clinton, I was not surprised. It was actually comical. I thought you were lying. Mm-hmm. I thought Al made that up. No, Al did not make that up. I was not surprised.
And it was the judge. The judge allowed it. That's what was so bad. It wasn't so much the attorneys, it was the judge.
Yeah.
I don't know. I still blame Durham. He slow rolled this thing.
Yeah.
He was trying to build a perfect case on a low-level charge of lying to the FBI with all this other incredibly bad things happening. I don't know. It's like finding the smallest charge. A bunch of bad felonies are happening, and you focus on a misdemeanor to try to get a conviction, and you let everything else go, and then you fail at that. Durham should just be he should be ashamed. In fact, he's got another trial coming up. I don't even know. I forgot what that one's about, but he's going to lose that one too. It seems like the Democrats, right. They just throw crap on the wall. They talk about lawsuits that they're going to file, and then they throw the charges out there, and then that's what gets in the paper and the news, and it doesn't matter what happens with the trial, whether it's won or lost, because the damage is already done.
Right. Exactly. And it's their way or no way.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, Al. our
side's upset by mean tweets. This tweets weren't mean. These tweets are great.
They were great.
That.
And as you said, you knew exactly where Donald Trump stood. You knew exactly what was on the mind of President Trump. You knew what exactly he was going to do, and he wasn't going to take any crap from the establishment. And now you know why he was aggressive as he was.
Mm-hmm.
Because everything was a lie. And the media made sure that it was portrayed as truth.
Yep. Hopefully when he gets reelected, which I hope that he does, he won't make the same mistakes of bringing in these establishment Republicans for party unity. And he'll clean all these bureaucrats out. And then he'll start over from scratch. And
I'll tell you,
because he can only run for a four-year term. Legally,
I believe
you get a total of two 8 years. You get that's your max.
2 4-year terms, right?
Right, whether in succession or not.
I would fire everybody if I was elected president. I would fire everybody in the White House. I'd replace each and every person. Every person,
mm-hmm.
Right down to the janitor. And
yep.
I'd put my own people in, and then I'd go to the departments where, you know, whatever secretary that you put in, and you let every secretary, you let every staffer go. Everyone. Every one of them go. And you know, they say, well, you know, what about the Department of Education? Right now, there are 50 departments of education in the United States. Each state has their ability to run. You can bring somebody in with education knowledge and start, you know, start. You wouldn't be starting from scratch.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have the saturated and satiated, you know, Department of Energy, which is totally out of control. What was it, started in 1977 under Carter? You know, it was supposed to be help the fuel crisis that was impacting the United States, and now we're back to square one again 50 years later, 45 years later, and the Department of Energy has done shit. Boom, you're gone. Next, Undersecretary, gone. your secretary, the secretary to the undersecretary, gone. The mail person, gone. I mean, every gone. Gone.
God, what a job that would be.
Oh, it would be fun. It would be fun. You want to cut some budgets? You want to cut spending? I got a great way to cut spending. You just cut $250 billion right there. Bang, done. Now go leak, okay? Go ahead and start leaking. Go take a leak somewhere else, okay? Because we're not going to have any of that garbage. And if you don't like the way things are run, just render your resignation. Tender it right now. Boom, you're gone. Goodbye.
From your mouth to God's ears.
I know.
Let's hope it happens. We'll see.
And then I'd instruct the Speaker of the House, if it was a I don't care if it was a Republican, but if it was a Republican Speaker of the House, I said, I want one bill, the first bill. I want it simple, one page. Terminate all congressional pensions effective immediately. Boom. I want a bill. I will sign it. As soon as it's passed, I will sign it. And you instruct both houses of Congress, this needs to pass. This is not a career job. You serve at the will of we the people, just like I do as President of the United States. Boom. I want it passed immediately. I want it H.R. 001, S.B. 001. Terminate all congressional pensions effective immediately. You want term limits? You got it right there.
Run, Vito, run.
And then I got to find a bulletproof vest and one for that covers my head, too.
Don't worry. The vaccine will protect you.
Oh, yeah, thank you. Yeah. Yeah, that's worked out well, huh?
Oh, God. We've got people that have fully vaccinated have already gotten this thing three times already. It's so funny.
Oh, the side effects are incredible, aren't they?
Yeah, it's bad news. I mean, God. I mean, I never got it. And boy, did I catch shit from people, friends, family. It's amazing.
I didn't get too much from my family, you know. I got it from, I did get it from coworkers, and I didn't offer it up. And the fact that I didn't say anything, that was the funniest thing. So you didn't get vaccinated? I said, I didn't say that. Yeah, but you didn't say it. He did. I said, I find it to be a personal choice right now. So they were, you know. Well,
I have a checkup on Wednesday, and they asked on the pre-visit questionnaire.
Yeah.
They do that. And they said, have you been vaccinated? And I put on there, I choose not to answer. They actually gave you a thing for not to respond.
Okay.
They didn't ask any more about it, so I didn't respond. Because I was afraid, I was literally afraid that if I responded no, that there would be repercussions between my doctor and I, my relationship with that doctor. She may have to drop me. I don't know. She may say,
really?
All of our patients. I didn't, and I'm speculating, I don't know, but in the back of my mind, I was thinking that that could be a result of me saying that I am not vaccinated.
Okay.
That because I answer that way, she would need the doctor would need to send that information somewhere where the health insurer would need to see that information. Just by answering no, it would trigger a response that she would have to follow, a procedure.
So you don't think your doctor
would...
It's
just all in my head. I don't know. Maybe it's just all in my head. It's just my cynicism, perhaps. I don't know.
Well, I don't know, but you think the doctor would take that? Yeah, well, you know, I mean, I've read where doctors have released patients because they've not gotten the jab. So,
well,
I mean,
I don't know. I don't know. I didn't know for sure, so I aired, since I had a choice to say nothing, that I choose not to answer that question. That's why I chose, because not to answer that question, because I figured the relationship between me and my doctor should be secure enough to where if I'm not vaccinated, that's something she may need to know for whatever reason. I don't know.
Yeah.
I choose not to tell her, and that's how far down that the medical profession has dropped in my eyes. They used to be out for my their reason. I always thought that they would have my best interests at heart as a patient. And I've told you this before. I don't feel that way anymore. I don't think that they would have my best interests.
I have to agree with you on that. Honest to God, I do. I mean, I agree with you wholeheartedly on that.
Yeah, and it was weird. I was with some friends this last week, and we were all sitting around talking, and two of them, remember the Regeneron that they had over at one of the local stadiums or whatever? They had Regeneron.
Yes.
If you got COVID, you could go and get the Regeneron, and it was very effective. Well, two of the people who were friends were very, very sick. It just hit them bad. They didn't take their ivermectin in time, and they were really hurting. Well, two of them went and got the Regeneron, and then within 48 hours, they were better. One guy, he's still teaching. So he's in his 60s, early 60s. Anyway, he got it real bad, too. He went to the doctor, and the doctor said, well, there's nothing that I can do for you now in case you get worse, and then if you get worse, come to the emergency room. And he asked him, he said, well, what about Regeneron? And the doctor said, I can't prescribe that. So he did not get the Regeneron, and he had to fight the thing, and luckily he made it through, but he said it was still it was a very difficult road that would have been made much easier if he had taken the Regeneron, which his doctor didn't prescribe that for him.
And what was the reason that the doctor wouldn't prescribe it?
He didn't have an answer. He didn't know.
He didn't have an answer. Wow.
Yeah. So I'm thinking to myself, all right, these are fairly well-informed people. Can you imagine how many people died because they didn't get the Regeneron that should have been offered, and they had to go and get this Redesivir, which literally killed them under doctor care.
Oh, my God.
I guess we'll never have an answer to that.
Well, Al, that my biggest fear would have been being put on Redesivir, knowing that you're put on that, you're dead. I mean, you have a 95% mortality rate by being put on Redesivir. These doctors weren't treating, you know, with therapeutics. That was the therapeutic. That was the death.
Yeah. And these doctors they're prescribing it. And what about this Hippocratic Oath? Doesn't apply anymore for these doctors? In my eyes, no.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm very cynical, what can I tell you?
You and me both. I think that's one thing we agree on. God,
that's crazy.
Well,
all right. Well,
have a good evening.
You have a great week. Hit them straight. Not too often.
Yeah, I'm going to try. I'm going to try not to hit them too often.
Yeah, gotta maybe go. Get a couple more rounds in the 60s. Wouldn't that be awesome?
Yeah, got to do some more practicing, and hopefully I can get out and get some practice. I haven't been able to practice as much as I would have liked to this week, but I'll try to get back out there and, you know, put some of the family stuff behind and get out there. So
there you go.
Yeah, get my priorities.
Right. Get your priorities straight.
Get my priorities straight. All right. Hey, have a nice evening.
Sue, you take care of yourself. You have a nice evening as well. Thank you for joining us this evening, and I hope you're feeling better, and your treatment is still healing you, by the way. She's had that homeopathic treatment, and it's working great. So, and there's another
good.
There's doctors again. It's doctors again, not going with natural cause, knowing that natural remedies could absolutely work, and she had to take it upon herself to use homeopathic remedies. That's working. I just, you know,
well, Sue, if you ever want to come on and talk about it, about what regimen you're on, because I'm sure there's a lot of people that are interested in that. I, for one, am very interested, so consider it.
Great.
I'd love to hear your story. Yeah.
All right. Have a great evening.
You too.
Ciao, everybody. Hey.
Adios, amigos.
Thank you, Easy Block Talk.